So we're talking about some. We're talking about the spiritual boot camp, or things that we need to do in our spiritual lives that sometimes that we need to be reminded of daily, weekly, or however long. And we're talking about specifically here, we're talking about meditation with the Lord and private devotions with the Lord, right? And so look at the middle part of the slide, practical considerations. We started this last time. The time to start a regular period of Bible reading and meditation and prayer is a couple weeks from now would be good, huh? That'd be a good time to start. No? Oh, now? Okay. Well, yes, now is the time to start if you don't already do it. These are just some tips to keep in mind. Number one, make it a priority in your life. If something's a priority, we'll make time for it, as my wife always reminds me. Nothing? Nobody? Oh, man. This is some of my best stuff, y'all. Come on now. Okay. As my wife always reminds me, you make a priority for the things that are important in your life. So let's go out on date night or whatever. Anyway, okay, that didn't work. Let's just move on. Forget that ever happened. Second one, make a plan. Set a time when you're going to meet with God each day. Generally speaking, the things we don't plan for are often the things that we don't do. Okay, so make a plan. Third thing, organize your prayers. I know some people have a little bit of resistance to this, especially people on the more Pentecostal charismatic side. They think everything should just be spontaneous. Just like spontaneously, I speak in tongues, spontaneously, I should read and pray or whatever. I'm saying I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that at all. I think we should have a regular plan and set aside a time when we'll meet with God each day. I think we should organize our prayers. What does that mean to organize your prayer? Organize your prayer time, but also when you pray, you don't have to do this. This is just a tip. Different things work for different people, right? Sometimes I find it helpful for me to have a list or a card. I've used both lists and cards to help me organize my prayer time for me to remember who I'm supposed to pray. A lot of times our church and many other churches have had in their bulletins, they've had, you know, prayer requests or a prayer list or whatever. Whatever works for you, a church bulletin, prayer list, or phone app, whatever. Organize your prayers. And the last one there is persevere. Don't be discouraged if you miss a day or two. What I found if I miss prayer time or if I miss meditation time or studying or whatever, the devil will jump on my back and say, you're no good. You missed and you should have done this. And it'll get us discouraged. Satan likes for us to be discouraged because then we give up, right? Over time, though, if we keep the habit, it'll become as natural as breathing. Turn to Matthew 26, if you would, and let's get started. Matthew 26. That was kind of introductory. Matthew 26, and let's look at something the Lord Jesus Christ. I've just decided, and I tell you this stuff, by the way, because we're going through this stuff right now, that we need to focus on our prayer time. We need to focus on our meditation, our devotion, our reading our Bibles and our studying and all the things that we need to do spiritually as Christians to try to live holy unto the Lord. And I don't say this to tout my own horn because my horn, I pawned it off a long time ago. So, but anyway, I do this because I'm like, well, maybe that'll inspire some of you or maybe whatever. But so what I do is, what I'm doing now is I'm going through the Gospels. I'm always going through the Gospels. So whatever I'm doing, whether I'm reading in the Old Testament through Genesis all the way to Malachi, or whether I'm going through the New Testament, which now I'm in Romans, I'm at chapter 13. But I'm also always going through the Gospels, right? I've decided this next time through the Gospels, which I've already started, but now I'm going to restart. I'm going to do it chronologically and just do the life of Christ or the Gospels chronologically. I usually do Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, but I think I'm going to switch it up. So I've got a little plan here, and it is a chronological order of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. So I'm going to go through that, through the Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and through the life of Christ chronologically as things happen, and turn to those verses then and check that off. And so that's what I've decided to do. But anyway, I was going through Matthew, and then I decided, no, I want to do something different. I'm going to do the life of Christ chronologically. So I had to. But anyway, Matthew 26, where I was reading in verse number. Well, look, this is if you start in verse 36, This is where Jesus prays in the Garden of Gethsemane. Gethsemane. Sorry, I can never say that word properly. But here's the thing. Do you have over your verse 36? Everybody's got different Bibles. My Bible, it has a little subtopic over verse 36. Jesus prays. Do you have subtopics in your Bible? I find they're helpful, especially as I'm going through the Old Testament. I find they're really helpful because it can be a lot of history in the Old Testament, and it helps to kind of put in context. So the context of verse 36 through 46 is Jesus praying in the garden. That's the context, right? Whether you have a subheading there or not really makes no difference. But I like subheadings, right? That helps me. I'm an OCD kind of person, so I like to things that help focus me more. But Jesus is praying in the garden, and look what he says in verse 36. He says, "Disciples, sit here while I go pray yonder." And of course, we know the story. Look at verse 41. Watch and pray that you enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. Jesus was understanding as he came back and that they were sleeping when he asked them to watch and pray. And he said in verse 40, "Could ye not watch with me 1 hour?" And Jesus understood that the flesh often gets in the way of the spirit. And that's what happens when we pray. The flesh often gets in the way. Look what he says in verse 45, though. I like this. I would have reacted differently. Like if those three disciples would have been my three sons, Jared, Aaron, and Nathan, I would have probably punished them or whatever. Or, you know, the way we did punishment in our house is I let them watch TV for a couple hours and that was their punishment. Right? No, I'm kidding. No, we didn't do that as punishment. Anyway, Jesus obviously reacted differently than I do because I'm, you know, fallen flesh. Verse 45, "Then cometh he to his disciples, saying to them, sleep on now and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hand of sinners." The Lord not only forgave them for their lapse in spiritual and physical slumber, but he would use them in mighty ways, as we all know, to advance his kingdom on earth and to propagate and give out the gospel, right? But I'm looking at this to say, I believe that Jesus will also bless us in our weakness, so we should never give up. Even if we fail, even if we fall in our devotional time, in our prayer time, we should never give up. God will bless us in spite of our weakness, right? So the conclusions, right there at the very bottom, some questions. We should ask ourselves some questions about our devotional time. Now, I don't want you to answer out loud. I want you to answer in your head. And I know for some of y'all, doing things in your head can be scary. I understand that. It's a scary place to visit. I get that. But just ask yourself these things inside your head. Are you ready? About your devotional time. How much time a day do you generally spend alone in conversation with God? Is it 5 minutes? Is it 10 minutes, right? How much time a day do you generally spend alone? By the way, as I'm asking these questions, I'm convicting myself. I'm not any better or think that I'm any better than anybody else here or anywhere. So these questions are for me. Now, I've got a multiple choice question. Did you like multiple choice when you were in school? Skip shaking his head. No, he didn't like school at all. Okay, well, that's okay. I've got a multiple choice question here. I don't want you to answer out loud. Here it is. What is the quality of your devotional time? If you had to choose one, which one would you choose? What's the quality of your devotional time? Now, I'm assuming that we all have devotional time when we get alone with God, that we have it planned out every day. I'm not saying that you always follow through, that things don't get in the way, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm saying that we have a planned devotional time every day. So how would you rate the quality of your devotional time? Is it A? Would you say A, non-existent? That would be tough. But be honest. Would you say your devotional time is B, hit or miss, and unsatisfying because it's hit or miss? Would you say your devotional time is C, dry? It's more of a duty. You do it out of a duty than you do because you can't wait and you're delighted to do it, right? Or, and by the way, I have no problem with letter C because sometimes in my life I'm at the point where I'm just like, I'm going to do it because I know I need to be doing it. I mean, if you say that you're always on cloud nine spiritually, you always feel like reading, you always feel like praying, you always feel like meditating, all those things, then I say to you, pray for me. Because I need your help, because I'm not always 100% there. But so if you say letter C, your devotional life is dry, it's more of a duty than anything else. Or would you say letter D, it's consistently nourishing. Your spiritual life is consistently nourishing. When you do it, you get something out of it and the Lord blesses you and you're consistent with it, All right. Maybe not on a daily basis, but almost a daily basis, right? So which one would you say? Letter A, it's non-existent. You don't have a devotional life, a prayer, meditation, study. Would you say it's letter C, hit and miss? Would you say it's letter, I'm sorry, B, hit and miss? Would you say it's letter C, it's more of a duty, you do it out of duty, than you do it because you really delight in reading the Bible and meditating and praying? Or would you say it's D, consistently nourishing? You do it on a consistent basis, and every time you do it, you get something out of it from the Lord. It's always, I can think of things in my life that I don't really want to do sometimes, but when I do them afterwards, I'm always happy that I did them, right? If I would think of a non-spiritual example, I used to, a couple years ago, I was big into exercising by swimming, and there was a local lake, spring-fed lake, not a nasty lake, spring-fed, so it's very clean, and I would go there and swim about a mile, and then, but there's sometimes like, I don't want to swim today, it's going to be a hassle, I got to go out there, it's going to be about, takes me about 25, 30 minutes to swim the mile, I know, that's slow, whatever, you tell me what you do, but anyway. But every time I got out, I always felt better. And I was always glad that I did it afterwards, right? So your devotional time may be a duty, but after you do it, there should always be, or almost always be, this feeling that it's nourishing spiritually, that you spent time with God, you feel better for it. If it's early in the day, you feel ready for the day, or whatever the case may be. Anyway, I don't know which one you answered, but think about that. Did you answer A, it's non-existent, B, it's hit or miss, C, it's kind of dry, it's more of a duty, or D, consistently nourishing? Here's another question. Do you find it difficult to make time to read and to meditate and to pray? Do you find it hard to make time in your day to do that? And I'm not saying, oh, you guys are, some of y'all are retired, you got plenty of time. I'm not stupid. I know just because you retired doesn't mean you have plenty of time in the day. I get it. It just means your time is replaced by other stuff that you, that you used to have to find other. Now it's filled with that stuff, right? Other than work. But do you find it difficult to make time to read and to meditate and to pray? Next question. What barriers or distractions keep you from meditating and praying and reading your Bible? What keeps you from doing that? And if what it is, like when you attempt to meditate and pray, sometimes ask yourself this, what thoughts, what feelings, or what things flood your mind? Because if there's one thing the devil doesn't want you to do, he doesn't want you to spend time with God. So the devil will flood your mind with thoughts. That's why we always start our meditation and prayer time with, and reading the Bible with prayer, that we ask the Lord to keep the devil at bay and to clean our minds and to, you know, let us be able to suss whatever he would have us to suss. Is that an old word, suss? Sorry, okay, for you young people, I don't know. Whatever time of day it is, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, whatever. Anybody? Nobody? No one? 6, 7? Nobody? Okay. Anyway. All right. Thank you, brother. Anyway, one person. Anyway. So anyway, that was a joke. So what barriers or distractions keep you from it? Are there any sins that you need to put to death? Things that enter your mind, feelings or desires that flood your mind when you attempt to meditate and you attempt to pray? What distractions or barriers keep you from doing it? I dare say that we would all agree whatever distractions keep us from doing it, they're not as important as actually meditating and praying and reading our Bibles, right? Another question, do you think about Jesus when you meditate and pray? I've got a quote from Tim Challis, the French-sounding dude, who said this. He says, there are a million things competing for your time and attention, and many of these things are very good things, but none are more important than your relationship with God. They can be good. They don't have to be bad things. It doesn't have to be sin that enters your mind. It can be good things. But I'll repeat what he says. None are more important than your relationship with God. I trust you're involved in a local church and committed to the weekly worship services, but I hope this is not the sum of your worship. What we do here is spiritual worship, but this should not be all of our worship, right? A complete accounting of your speaking to God and hearing from God should not be just what happens in church. He invites you to listen as he speaks and promises that as you speak, he will listen to your every word. Just like God has promised to listen to your every word, we should listen to what God has for us through his word, right? Would you deny yourself such a privilege? If you are going to run the race to win, you must practice your devotion. Just like athlete, I think he's making reference to Paul's metaphor of athletes, right? And I think that's what he's referring to here. If we're going to win this Christian race, we have to just like a racer has to practice in order to win, right? We have to practice our spiritual devotion in order to win this Christian race. And so we should always be looking at our spiritual devotion, always be looking at our devotional life, and always asking ourselves these questions about our devotional life. Because if you're anything like a lot of people, myself included, you'll start the year, I'm gonna turn over a new leaf. And it doesn't have to be January 1st. It can be, okay, I went down when Brother Mark preached, and you say, okay, I went down, I prayed, I'm going to rededicate my life to the, that's fine. It doesn't matter when you do it. But do you ever notice that after a period of time has gone by, there's kind of a little bit of a fall off, and maybe you're not as strident about your prayer and meditation and reading the Bible time as you were before? That's just something called inertia, right? That's what we're all guilty of. I hate to tell you this, but we're all running down. We're all running down physically. Brother Skip shakes his head. We're all running down mentally. We're all running down psychologically, right? I was driving in today and I was trying to think of a person's name and I couldn't remember the name, and I thought, I should know his name. I should know this person's name because he led my wife to the Lord many, many years ago. And it's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't. And I'm like, well, that's just probably old age. I'm getting old. I can't remember stuff like I used to. But we are running down, right? I don't know why, but we need to be more disciplined because we're running down our spiritual life, our disciplined life. It starts off good January 1st or right after a meeting, revival meeting or whatever. But like the rest of ourselves, inertia, sometimes that tends to kind of run down a little bit. We need to constantly be renewed in our spiritual time with the Lord, in our meditation, praying and reading the Bible, and our walk with the Lord. We need to constantly ask ourselves these questions and looking at it and see what we're doing. I did that this week. I looked back and I'm like, you know what? That day could have been much better than it was as far as me reading my Bible and praying. And then I remember, was it a day or two ago? I can't remember what it was. I had a choice. I had a definite choice. Oh, I came in after driving a bunch of school kids to College Station and back to Aggieland. But anyway, and so it was a long day. I was worn down. I was tired, although Aggieland's not that far. But anyway, and so when I got home, I had a choice. I'm tired. I'm drugged down. Not drugged. I'm drugged down. I had a choice. I could sit in my chair in the living room. I got Bibles over here, I got books over here, and I can study. Or I can lay down on that couch and just rest and relax. I had a choice to make, folks. I hate to say it, in this instance, I chose to lay on the couch and relax because I was tired. Was that a sin? Probably not. But was that a better way, the best way to use my time? No. Should I have dedicated myself? Yeah. Now, did I want to sit upright and to mark in my books or to read or to whatever? Did I want to do that? Yeah, kind of. But if I would have just done that instead, even though I didn't necessarily want to do that as much as laying on the couch and catching a quick nap, if I would have done that instead, I guarantee you after I would have finished, I would have felt better. I would have felt better about everything, about especially my use of time. Because when I got up from that nap on the couch, I felt better physically, but inside I'm like, you know what? I should have sat there and I should have read and I should have studied and I didn't. And so, you know, anyway, we've all got choices to make in that area. Let's go on to the next slide, brother. Let's go on to the next one. Let's do the last thing. Let's talk about another thing we need to be disciplined in. And if you've heard this once, you've heard it a million times. Am I right? We need to be disciplined in our time. We need to be disciplined with our time. I just told you an example of my life, how we spend time, who we spend it on, who we spend it with, and all of those things. Turn to Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament, if you would. Ecclesiastes, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Ecclesiastes. I had a, I woke up the other morning and I had a disaster happen in our house. All of my, we have fake plants because I'm not very, not a green thumb or whatever. All of our fake plants were dead. I'm like, how does that happen? And then I thought, oh, I remember now. I forgot to pretend water them. Anyway, hey, you got to try until you get something right. So at least I got a couple laughs out of that. All right, so I'm good now. We can move on. My ego has been satisfied. All right. As Christians, we need to be more disciplined with our time. Look at what Solomon is telling us in Ecclesiastes 11, and look at verse number 8. But if a man live many... By the way, Solomon was known to be kind of a smart dude. But if a man live many years and rejoice in them all, let him remember the days of darkness, for they shall be many. All that cometh is vanity. Well, that's not what I want to hear when I go hear Joel Osteen. It's for him to tell me to remember my days of darkness. Brother Joel is supposed to be telling me how I can live my best life now, right? And I can make it in the business world, and I can, you know, all this sort of stuff, right? And so if Brother Chad doesn't make me feel good before I leave, I'm just not going to enjoy the service at all. I mean, I'm just saying I'm supposed to be made to feel better. Solomon is not, what is he saying here? He tells us we should rejoice. Look what he says. If a man live many years and rejoice in them all, that's what we're supposed to do. Yet let him remember the days of darkness. We should rejoice if the Lord gives us a long life. But we need to remember that in that time, there will be many dark days. Or there'll be good times, there'll be bad times. Look what it says, for they shall be many. All that cometh is vanity. Whether good times or bad, when life seems to move quickly or life seems to move slowly, we are responsible for what we do in each moment of time. You may think, Brother Chris, it's not that big a deal, whatever. I'm not saying it's a big deal, but I'll have to be responsible for that, what was it, 20 minutes I slept on the couch as opposed to getting up and as opposed to sitting in my chair and reading and studying. Because after I got up off the couch, after that 20-minute nap, I had chores to do and I went and did my chores. So what got neglected? My reading and my studying got neglected for that 20. I'm not saying that's I didn't do any that day. I did other times of that day, but that time, you know, I spent sleeping, right? I spent napping on the couch or whatever. I'm responsible for what I do with every idle moment in my life, and so are you. We may differ on how important each individual moment is, but there's no doubt that we'll give an accounting of ourselves to God. You've heard it a million times. If you've been in an independent Baptist church, you're responsible and you'll be given account for your time, your treasure, and your talents. How are they spent towards the Lord? How are you spending your time? How are you spending your treasure, your money? How are you spending your talents for the Lord? And time is definitely one of those, right? Turn to Ephesians in the New Testament, Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. Speaking of things that died, you're not going to believe this. I had a parrot when I was in college. I had a parrot who could talk. You know, he's one of those talking parrots. But I, again, woke up one morning and he was at the bottom of his cage, dead as a doornail. And I figured out what happened to my talking parrot. He never told me he was hungry. So, guys, this is my best stuff. I'm sorry. This is the best I got. All right, here we go. Ephesians 5. Did I tell you the verse? Verse 16. Here we go. Verse 16. You say, Brother Chris, leave the jokes to somebody else. Okay. Ephesians 5:16. Paul writes, starting in verse 15. Let's go to verse 15. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. Redeeming the time, you've read this verse a million times, because the days are evil, right? Redeeming the time means here to make the best use of the time that God has given us. If I got a coupon for a free dinner at Cracker Barrel, I'm going to go redeem that coupon. As long as they don't have the new woke stuff up on the walls, I'm going to redeem my coupon at Cracker Barrel, right? If you don't redeem your coupon, you're wasting your coupon, right? When I go play the lottery next week, if I win, no, I'm joking. But if I was to play the lottery and I had the winning ticket, why would I not cash it in? Which I don't play, so I'm never going to have one. But anyway, what if I found one on the ground, all right, and it was a winning ticket and I didn't go cash it in, right? That's what Paul's talking about here. Redeeming the time to make good use, to cash in, to make good use of the time that God has given us. We need to redeem or liberate our time from useless pursuits and dedicate our time to those things which would bring glory to the Lord. I think back when I was a kid growing up and a teenager, I would sit with my stepdad and we would watch football on Sunday sometimes for like 3-4 hours or more. That was the day, that was when they had the Houston Oilers. Anybody remember the Houston Oilers? And I went to the Astrodome. We didn't have much money, but we went to one game in the Astrodome. We saw the Houston Oilers play. And then y'all remember the theme song? We're the Houston, no Houston people. Brother Mark, if he were here, he would know what I'm talking about. Anyway, we would spend, and I think to myself, you know what? I was just a kid, so I'm not going to be hard on myself or whatever. But I was a Christian kid. I claimed to know and love the Lord. And so I'm thinking, I could have redeemed my time better. So I'm thinking about redeeming, and I'm not using football as an example. I know a lot of y'all watch football, and I'm not saying that. I'm just using my own self as an example. I need to redeem my time because there's some things I do that I consider, as I look back, I consider those pursuits or those things I do are kind of useless, right? And so we need to redeem our time or liberate our time from useless pursuits. We need to dedicate our time to those things that would bring glory to God. Now, don't get me wrong, folks. I'm not stupid, although y'all might have a different opinion. I'm not totally stupid. Is that better? I'm not 100% dumb. I understand that we can't read our Bibles every minute of every day, that we can't pray every minute of every day. We have to go work. But even when we're not working, I understand that we can't read our Bibles every hour that we're not at work doing something or reading about the Bible or studying or meditating or whatever. I understand that, folks. Don't get me wrong. But don't you agree that we have some pursuits, some things we do that are just useless when it comes to, as far as the Lord's concerned and the kingdom is concerned, that they're pretty much useless? Wouldn't you agree to that? We would all agree to that. We all have those things. I'm not telling you what yours are and you don't tell me what mine are or whatever, but we all have them, right? I'm saying we need to redeem our time. We need to walk circumspectly. We need to redeem our time. We need to cash that lottery ticket in, if you will, and because the days are evil. I was reading a book that a dude wrote. He was doing a commentary on the book of Ecclesiastes, and I was going through the book of Ecclesiastes, and I had some commentaries already that I've read. I thought, I want something new, so I read this guy. One point he made, he said, we should live our lives backwards. Well, that just sounds weird. Sounds like some new hippy-dippy thing that this dude's trying to promote because so he can appear cool man or whatever. And I started thinking about it and reading through the book. It's not a bad strategy. How do we live our lives? We live our lives like I'm X number of years old now. That means I probably have about X number of years. And most people, you know, whatever, have about X number of years. And then I'll probably have to start thinking about, you know, about going on and being with the Lord at some point or whatever. But we kind of like, okay, I probably have this much time. He's like, no. You need to live your life starting at the end, not starting now and looking forward, but start at the end of your life and look backwards. Your life, so in other words, it'd be kind of like this. He didn't say this. I may be misrepresenting this author. I can't even remember his name. But it'd be kind of like this. What if tomorrow was your last day? You would think hard about how you would spend every hour today, right? Wouldn't you? If you knew next Friday was your last day on earth, wouldn't you spend the next 4 or 5 days like reading your Bible like you'd never done before, witnessing to those people who are friends or family members or whatever the case may be, correct? Wouldn't you do that? His point was we should live life backwards, not forwards, but live life as if this is the end. I want to make sure I spend it as best that I can unto the Lord, right? I'm not saying if you're a Christian, you can't have fun. I'm not saying you can't go out and play back. It's interesting that Brother Mark was here because I remember I think I played basketball against him about 35 years ago. And if you've never, well, he's a lot calmer now than he used to be. But if you knew Brother Mark in his young days, you'd know how he played basketball. He would run you over as soon as look at you. If he had the ball and you're in the lane and you're standing in the way, you're going to be on the floor. And he's not going to apologize for it. Because he, like he preaches, he plays just like he preaches. He plays hard, man. I mean, because I went to First Baptist Church in Houston. And he used to go to First Baptist Church and play hoops because we had a nice new gym that we built and stuff like that. Anyway, I don't know how that came up. But anyway, let's go back to the point. The point is, life seems to move quickly or slowly, but we're responsible for what we do for every moment. And if you think, if you live your life backwards and you think that next week could be my last week on earth, how would you live your life this week, right? We would all live our lives different. I wouldn't have taken a 20-minute nap on the couch, probably. I probably would have done a lot more better, important things, right? I'm not saying we can't have fun as Christians. Of course we can have fun. That's what basketball brought up. That's right. So if you want to go play basketball, play basketball. I don't care. It doesn't bother me. But we do spend a lot of our time on stupid stuff, and we need to cut that out. We need to redeem our time. An American theologian, maybe you've heard of him, by the name of Jonathan Edwards. Anybody heard of him? Jonathan Edwards? Yeah, he's not known at all. So anyway, I'm joking. That was anyway. He said this. When he was a young kid, he made a resolution. He said he made a resolution, I quote, never to lose one moment of time, but to improve it the most profitable way I possibly can. Edwards understood that time had been given to him in a trust, and he meant to use it well. If I was given $1 million tomorrow, would you think I would just go spend it on stupid stuff? I'm too old. I've been doing this too long. It's too ingrained into me to watch the finances and to make sure we're not spending our money on stupid stuff and to confront my wife when I think she's spending money on stuff, maybe a little too much money on stuff that we don't need or whatever. I mean, that's ingrained in me. Because I get $1 million, you think I'm just going to go all of a sudden just blow it? I can't change who I am, right? You can't change that inside, right? That's why people that have no money and get $1 million blow it. Does that make sense? If you want to be rich today in America, you can become rich, right? And you become rich by doing things rich people do, saving their money, not spending it on stupid stuff. Really rich people drive used cars or buy used cars. They don't buy new Maseratis or whatever. Anyway, so Jonathan Edwards understood time was like a trust that the Lord had given to him. And that Jonathan Edwards realized that he had a responsibility to use that trust money, if you will, to use that money wisely. We have been given a trust. We've been given a lot of things in this life, but one of the things we've been given by the Lord is time. He's given us time, right? And we're to use that time wisely. We have that responsibility. Because when you think about it, is our money really ours? No, it's not. It belongs to who? Belongs to God, belongs to the Lord. Are our talents really ours? Like I did this or I did that, you know? No. Our talents belong to the Lord. Our time belongs to the Lord also. It's no different, right? So if you turn, if you will, to Matthew chapter 5, just go back a few pages to Matthew 5 in the Gospels. It goes John, Luke, Mark, and then Matthew. Matthew chapter 5. Actually, I'm fixing to do that this week when I start my study of the Gospels, harmony of the Gospels, and study them chronologically. I'm fixing to jump back and forth between anyway. Here we go, Matthew 5. Let's look. I don't want to read the whole thing here. Of course, it's Sermon on the Mount. We all know Matthew 5 and all know Matthew 6. And you know Matthew 5, 6, and 7 because you probably see a lot of one color, don't you? Do you see a lot of red? Right. You may have a Bible that's black letter. I prefer red. I like red letter Bibles. I have a blue letter. This one's the words of Christ are in blue, but I'm glad that I'm not saying they're more spiritual than any other words, but I just kind of like to see when the Lord was talking, right? I like to see when Jesus. So anyway, I'm sorry. Matthew chapter 5. If you start at verse 14, I want to look at the, no, that's not what I wanted to look at. I want to look at the, I turned to the wrong place, y'all. I wanted to turn to Christ's parable about the talents. Where is his parable about the talents? Let me look and see if I can find it. He starts doing a lot of parables in Matthew 13. So I'm in Matthew 13. Let's see if it's there. No. Sorry, that's where most of the parables that I know of are in 13. I'm sorry, it's Christ's parable about the talents, right? The servants, each servant was given a different amount of money by his master. His master said, I'm going away. I want you to keep control of my money until I get back. He comes back. And the one person who had been given a talent said that I've invested your money. And the Lord said, okay for that. The master said, okay for that. I'll give you twice as much now because you've been faithful. The other guy says, well, I've invested your talents. I've got not as much as the other guy, but I got a little bit of money. And the master says, you're faithful and I trust you. I'll give you more money. And what happened to the one dude that said, I know you're a hard master, so I kept your talent hidden under my pillow, and here it is. What did the master of the house say to him? He said, away from me, unprofitable servant, right? And he took the talent away from him, right? The point of the story is this. I believe the principle is good for anything, whether it's your treasure, your time, or in the parable, your talent, right? Or your money, right? That God gives us. The servant realized what his master had given him. He had a responsibility to use it wisely. To use it correctly and wisely and to increase in it, right? And he didn't do that, and that's why he was condemned. For the same thing we're supposed to do, and I'm sorry about fell down on the spot there. I wrote down the wrong reference. It's not the first time, probably won't be the last. Anyway, I blame it on Skip. But anyway, I'll just ask you this question. What are some of the ways that you waste your time? What are some of the ways that I waste my time, right? I've got some suggestions. Can I offer some suggestions? Maybe none of these are yours. These are all just me. But let's look at them. Are you ready? Do you see that first bullet? We waste our time in laziness. In laziness. Sometimes we waste our time in laziness. Turn to the book of Proverbs, if you would. Back to the book of Proverbs. Let's see if I get this one right. We never know. Maybe I was having a bad day that day I was doing Sunday school. Maybe my wife and I were fussing or something. I don't know. I'll blame it on her. Proverbs 6, look at verse number 9. Yep, I got the right one this time. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou rise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall thy poverty come as one that travaileth, and thy want as an armed man. A lazy person sleeps when they should be awake, they should be up and about. An irresponsible person lies in bed, or Brother Chris, like I just told you the other day, lies on the couch when there's other stuff that could be done. Turn to Proverbs 26, if you would. Proverbs 26. And again, look at verse 14. As the door turneth, I was talking to a student yesterday at Texas A&M, and this student graduated last year from our school, and she's going to A&M now, and she knew that I was going to be there, and another one of her friends, she wanted to meet up, so her and I met up, and we talked and whatever, and I said, I hope we didn't wake you because we were there pretty early at the college. And you came out. Thanks for coming out and visiting with me. I hope, you know, she's like, no, it's fine. I need to get up. And she said, I'm usually on a Saturday. Oh, no, it was Saturday. Yeah, Saturday yesterday. I'm usually don't get up till about noon or whatever. And I'm like, oh, that's, you know, whatever. But here's the thing. Look at Proverbs 26, verse 14. And I'm not putting this person down at all. As the door turneth upon his hinges, so doth the slothful upon his bed. I like that analogy, don't you? Like the door turns on its hinges, a lazy person tosses and turns in their bed, right? Anyway, I thought that was good. Anyway, verse 15. The slothful hideth his hand in his bosom. It grieveth him to bring it again to his mouth. He's lazy. Verse 16, the sluggard is wiser in his own conceit than seven men that can render a reason. A lazy person makes any excuse not to work. They begin jobs, but they don't finish them. They can't learn anything because they already think of themselves as smart. The old saying goes, idle hands are what? the devil's workshop. Y'all don't know that old saying? I thought y'all were old enough to know that old saying. The idle hands are the devil's workshop. That saying has a lot of truth to it. Oh, is it time? Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't see it. All right, let me finish this thought. Idle hands, it has much truth. It's a serious warning. People who are lazy with nothing they want to do are practically, you're practically begging Satan to tempt you to sin. Think about that. When you're idle, you're practically tempting Satan or telling Satan, hey, I'm not doing nothing. I don't want to do nothing. Come and tempt me to do something to sin. Satan will find something for you to do. If you're lazy, he will find something for you to do, but I guarantee it won't be something that's uplifting and something that glorifies God. Let's go ahead and stand, and let's be dismissed with a word of prayer.